1390 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Update on the shooting during an attempted robbery yesterday in San Francisco of 49ers wide receiver Ricky Pearsall. He's home from the hospital. Police say the teenage gunman was also wounded and is arrested. Whoever kills hostages does not want a Gaza ceasefire deal, says Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu after the Israeli military says it recovered six bodies of hostages kidnapped by Hamas last October. They include an American, Hirsch Goldberg, Poland from Chicago. Moshe Lavi, the brother-in-law of hostage Omri Moran, who's still believed to be held in Gaza.
They were brutally murdered by Hamas. We're so angry at the international community for allowing it.
10,000 union hotel workers went on strike today at 25 hotels in eight cities. Higher wages and a reversal of staffing cuts, top issues. They're investigating the collapse of a portion of bleachers at a rodeo arena north of San Antonio yesterday, injuring 12 people. This is ABC News. Saying it's a mystery to him, too, Emory Cobb, father of Corey Cobb Bay. Police say his son gunned down a Dallas police officer Thursday by walking up to a parked patrol car and firing a handgun. Cops opened fire and killed his son after a highway chase and, they say, after he aimed a shotgun at officers.
I don't have any idea what happened, you know, what was going through his mind or whatever. But, you know, he had just recently lost his job or something, and that might have taken a little toll on him.
He says his son was not violent. Dermatologists seeing a surge in young girls with skin issues due to using anti-aging products promoted online. ABC's Dave Packer.
This is influencers tap into young people's increased anxiety about body image by promoting elaborate skincare routines. Girls as young as eight are suffering from rashes and chemical burns from products not intended for children's sensitive skin.
ABC's Dave Packer. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm. From the lakeshore to Lake Winnebago.
Door to Fond du Lac counties.
Northeast Wisconsin is special for many different reasons. I'm Lisa Hale.
And I'm Terry Barr. Family and fun.
Safe communities and friends. We're featuring all of it as part of New Wisco Weekend, a news magazine show just for you, and highlighting what makes the Fox Valley and Green Bay area a great place to live.
Join us.
New Wisco Weekend, Saturday mornings at 8, Sundays at 11 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health, because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Media News. I'm Terry Bell. The site of the former General Motors plant in Janesville has been empty for 15 years. The city is applying for a federal grant to spur new and more sustainable development there. Here's Mike Moan.
The city of Janesville will host a trio of public listening sessions in September as it prepares to apply for a $20 million EPA grant that focuses on environmental justice. The city's economic development director, Jim Z. Cuborn, says as they try to reimagine the old General Motors and JATCO site, they want surrounding neighborhoods experiencing low incomes and other side effects to have a brighter future.
We've got trees growing up in the middle of the asphalt and fences falling over, and so go in and create a green opportunity, a green field for new development and new opportunity.
She says that could include new energy-efficient housing and the possibility of solar projects. The GM site was demolished just prior to the pandemic, and this specific EPA grant doesn't deal with needed soil cleanup work. But Cuborn touts the importance of pursuing environmentally friendly development so that neighborhoods don't have to deal with things such as excessive stormwater runoff from these old sites. Cuborn says cities like Janesville aren't alone in confronting this problem.
There are multiple sites throughout the United States where we've seen things offshored, some things reshore, and communities are sitting on these blighted assets.
Janesville has encountered roadblocks, including working with a private company and getting the GM site fully free of contamination and its remaining concrete removed. And a recent Brookings Institution report outlined how the area has been able to survive without solely relying on heavy manufacturing. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Beck.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Sunny skies and gusty northwest winds on this first day of September and highs in the lower 70s. Tonight, mostly clear skies. The winds will back down as temperatures drop to near 50 degrees. Labor Day, sunny skies, light winds in lower 70s. Right now, it's 73.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm in my new time slot from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and we'll be doing my show from Madison, where joining me in studio will be award-winning filmmaker and record producer Wendy Schneider.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Kicking off this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from Busted Pencils. This week, Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny break down the shocking news from the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, a conservative anti-public school think tank that has only now concluded that systemic poverty has an impact on education.
Buster Pencils, it's fully led in education talk. It's truly educated educators talking education. Got a lot of participation right away. Cindy, L.A., Tom, Keith calling in. Yeah, we were talking about the Electoral College. We're moving on to that, though, kind of talking about new findings out of the Fordham Institute, not to be confused with Fordham University, the Jesuit institution in New York City. But socioeconomic factors may influence the academic achievement gap. In fact, if you read very much all the way to the end, one of the most strongest indicators they point out is parental income, which the last time I checked, parental income has something to do with poverty. How much money your parents make and the education of your mom. Throw those two together, which are, guess what? Those are truly socioeconomic indicators. Guess what happens? The achievement gap, particularly for the racial achievement gap for Black, white, and Hispanic students, gets expanded, Johnny Lupinacci.
Yeah, here's the thing, Fordham, sorry, a little bit too little, way too late. We've known this for, we have evidence, we have research evidence for decades now, and it goes longer than that.
Right.
That socioeconomic factors, and I'm going to say that's also code language for like what Tim's talking about, like the systemic way poverty exists in this country, the lack of access to healthcare, you know, food deserts, the young people who don't have access, young animal people who don't have healthcare access, right? The ways that we fail communities, right? So, but for decades and decades, I can remember when I was first becoming a teacher 20 some years ago, I had a professor. And you could tell him the family income of a household, and he could tell you within a tenth of a point what that student would get on their ACT and SAT. He had mathematical algorithms that could give you the, you input an income and then combined family income out of a household, put it into the computer, right down to the last kind of thing. He could tell you exactly what that kid's score is, know nothing about them, never have looked at their grades, and be accurate to within a tenth of a point. So this is the way that, like, we know, we have known for a really long time, it doesn't really matter who you are, right? The systems are stacked in a way where you have, if you're born into poverty, you have uphill the whole way. You have no opportunity to pick yourself up from the bootstraps, as so the myth might tell. Now, occasionally, like winning the lotto, people make it. And do they work hard? They sure do, Tim. So I don't want to take that away from those folks that are listening out there who's like, man, wait, I was poor when I was young and I've worked really hard. I wouldn't exactly call myself not poor now. Like, I think most people in America probably listening aren't exactly identifying as billionaires, millionaires, or you know, wealthy to say, but they sure worked hard. But it doesn't work for everyone. In fact, if you are if you are at a disadvantage when you're born or in the community you're in, you will likely stay at or go lower than that level in this country. And that's a sad thing. So a little bit too little, way too late, boredom. And sorry, doesn't annul you of your sins in my book. Some of us who are familiar with this. Oh, man. What's that? That's the Democracy in Action bell every day at the same time at the 40-minute mark in the hour. We ring the bell, and that signals that we are going to award the Democracy in Action Award. Today's Democracy in Action Award, you know what? It goes to everybody who values justice.
Mm.
That's working not too little, not too late, right? So I know there are a lot of people out there say, cut them some slack. The Fordham Institute is finally agreeing with us. Well, I'll tell you what, the us way back then, and it wasn't even me, it's generations before me who were saying, you know what? This is systemic. Poverty matters, and we can do something about it. And when we do something about it, it changes lives. It improves our entire country, and it starts oftentimes at education and healthcare and early childhood, you know, kinds of ways. And to systemically ignore that, especially and to ignore that in marginalized communities, I hate that term. It should be people who have been excluded from the power and privilege that the political majority has held for far too long. But, you know, we often refer to those as minority groups. Don't like that language, but that'll help identify. Have suffered disproportionately and are more likely to experience factors of poverty. So Fordham, a little bit too little, a little bit too late. So Democracy in Action Award, you know, those are core democratic values that support democracy. Go to everybody who was justice the whole way.
But you know, Johnny, you pointed out to the prediction ability of socioeconomic. And just a reminder for people, we have had on the show Christopher Tenken from Seton Hall, who has really come in to say, you want to know what your test scores are going to be? All he needs are a few socioeconomic factors, very much like you said, Johnny, and his ability to predict the test scores before the students take the tests. He can do that without knowing anything other than a few socioeconomic factors. I think that is really, you know, again, pointing that out. But, you know, the other part here, too, is that we talk about this often. How do you make sense of media? You know, and this is one of those things, the education media here, Johnny, and the title of this article, I'm going to put the title out here, Socioeconomic Factors Partially at Play in Racial Achievement Gaps. Partially at play. So you can hear right there, there's kind of this hedging. Oh, I don't know, maybe. All the way to the end of the article, though, the findings. Household income was the biggest contributor to the Black-White achievement gap. Okay, so how do you go from the income, household income being the biggest, and you have a headline, Jess, that says, well, partially.
I mean,
partially.
Technically, Tim, 90% is partial.
I guess. This is one of those where you're just like, you're kidding me, right? And typically, so this kind of means also comes a little bit of a critique for K-12 Dive, who put this out there. They're the ones who titled this piece from, you know, and again, the research they're citing is coming out of the Fordham Foundation. And I know the Fordham Foundation probably said, hey, can you give us a title that's a little bit more up our alley? You know, I mean, socioeconomic partially at play. Hey, you know what? And by the end of the article, which most people don't read to the end of the article, you could throw in there that big household income was the biggest contributor to the Black-White achievement gap. And Johnny, as you point out to how many people listening right now are going, duh, we already knew this. It's like, yeah, you know, and that's why we're putting it out there, though, too, is to say, though, our advocacy and the continuing talking about this and laying out the realities that these are the things that truly affect academic achievement. If you really are concerned about students doing well in school, hey, now, finally, after 40 years of yelling that poverty don't matter, the reality is that poverty does matter. We have been saying that for going on 40 years now. In fact, the advocacy that we have been putting out there, I would take this as an accomplishment that we have finally pushed an organization like the Fordham Foundation to actually square with the true research and the research findings out there that says, hey, when you're dealing with academic achievement, you got to look at household income. And man, guess what? One of their other recommendations, though, too, boy, I mean, talk about a big one, but early childhood education should be well funded.
Fancy that.
Incredible.
Well, and in fact, Johnny, that is one of the insights in there, too, is that the investment that you have pointed out many times, that the reason we're doing these things are the investments early on, and we know they pay off in the long run. So guess what? An investment in early childhood education, early childhood interventions. Now, they don't go in. Besides the early childhood education, they don't talk about the early childhood interventions that we might point out that would be, you know, like you said, access to food, healthy food. Maybe if you're in Minnesota and the governor there, who's now the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats, Tim Walz, where they said, you know, they're not banishing books in Minnesota. They're banishing hunger, free breakfast and lunch for those kids, because guess what? That issue, that economic condition, hunger, big contributor to the academic achievement gap. So we're going to go after that. Healthcare, yeah. Shelter, all of these issues that may or may not necessarily be included in early childhood advocacy. So Fordham, if you're saying that all kids need access to, quote, preschool, I'm not so sure that that's exactly what your research is saying. Your research is saying poverty, anti-poverty issues connected to early childhood education. Because, Johnny, there's actually a pretty good amount of research out there that early childhood education without the intervention of poverty reduction actually doesn't go that far. It doesn't go that far because it just doesn't, because we go back to the number one idea, the hierarchy of needs, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. When you need food, shelter, healthcare, and clothing to actually survive in this world, survive. That's just to survive in this world. Then you want to start moving up to the thriving categories of Maslow's hierarchy, where you got to do a little bit more. But to get up there to that learning, that self-actualization, you got to have things like food, healthcare, hunger, shelter, all of those things. One more other trending news issue here as we're coming up on this. So, Johnny, but guess what? One of the better ways to actually teach kids how to think critically, they can actually get into a discussion of where did this history content come from? So in other words, why do we learn about Martin Luther King last year? And why is this year Martin Luther King Jr. considered a controversial subject? Hey, let's study how history standards are made, because that might actually give us into insight. Makes me ask the question, though, would that be considered a subversive activity, actually teaching why Martin Luther King didn't make the cut? Hey, we'll figure it out more. Hold on.
Fox Reports, Boys in the Ridge. We go in America. Whoa.
Busted Pencils is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings at 6 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
When you think about Labor Day and what it means, do you think about Wisconsin? You should, but let's go back to explain. In the mid-1800s, activists pushed for a day to recognize workers' contributions. President Grover Cleveland signed a law in 1894, making the first Monday of every September a national holiday. So where did the first labor union form in Wisconsin? Wausau? Green Bay? Milwaukee? The answer coming up. The Badger State has an impressive history. Bricklayers and carpenters formed unions in the 1840s and were the first to push for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance. Now, did you guess? This all happened first in Milwaukee. The state's labor unions formed in 1847. The National Labor Union didn't form until 1866, 19 years later, leading the way for other states is this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Up next on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. This week, Pat covers how the Inflation Reduction Act from the Biden-Harris administration is already making a difference in lowering long-term energy costs. Selena Heller takes us to Black River Falls to do the math on how an upfront tax credit for solar panels will save taxpayers' dollars.
Frankie Valli, title track to Grease, the soundtrack for the motion picture. The motion picture was the big summer blockbuster of 1978, and that was the number one song on this day back in 1978. Reminder, you can sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Again, upnorthnewswi.com. Selena Heller is back with us as well, working on stories for Up North News, headed back to her old stomping grounds in the BRF area, to talk about the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, that and, let's see, there was also ARPA, the American Rescue Plan, and some of the other ways that the Biden administration, and now the Biden-Harris administration, has worked to increase energy efficiency, fight climate change, but also make the ways to do that more affordable. And it's that part, Selena, the affordability measure that Black River Falls and other school districts were wrestling with.
Right. So in Black River, I mean, the buildings and ground supervisor's name is Kent Weinman, and he's been wanting to do something like this, you know, talking about it for a lot of years, but it just never was attainable and it just never made sense. And so these projects were kind of put out to other entities before, homeowners and solar panels and things like that, but now they're open to nonprofits and schools and churches. And so they thought they would take advantage of it because now they can afford it and now it makes sense. And so he talked to me, we went up on the roof. And so I've never been on the roof of the high school. I mean, I spent a 4 years there, but so it was my first time on the roof, of course. And so he talked about now they get a 30% tax credit, which made it something that they wanted to do.
All right.
And so this is Kent Weinman.
You look to lean towards on that solar, but then realize the price point is the payback wouldn't be for 20 years. We'd only get 5 years of free electric. When that 30% rebate came, that was the selling point right there. It's like, okay, these will be paid off in 12 years and we'll be running free.
And that's the important thing is to calculate that return on investment. I mean, again, it's very easy to for somebody to say, oh, well, free money. Sure. Well, let's put up solar panels. But then if they never actually pay for themselves, they're not worth the investment. But yeah, he definitely you get the impression from the story that you can read at upnorthnewswi.com. This is a guy that's run the numbers repeatedly to make sure that this works.
Oh, right. And they've done they're called a legacy project because they have done so many updating projects and looking at all of their energy things from the company that installed the solar panels, because they've done so many upgrades in the HVAC system and LED, putting in LED lighting. And so he's really committed to kind of things like this and looking at projects. So what this is they, the energy offset is 22%. That's what they're hoping to get out of this. And then that's $15,000 a year in savings for them. And they got to focus on energy utility rebate for more than $13,000. And then the one-time Inflation Reduction Act tax credit of $87,000. So that's how, it's a lot of numbers. But that now he talks about even more savings on top of that. And here's how he explains that.
you can save money in two different ways with the solar panels. The number that shows you saving $15,000 in savings and electrical savings, that's just part of the picture. Another part of the picture it got explained to me is, okay, you're saving $15,000 in cost, but that's also lowering our demand from the utility. And by lowering our demand from the utility, that can drop us into a lower rate. So we're saving $15,000 directly from our utility bill, but by dropping into a lower rate, we might be able to save another $10,000 to $15,000 just with our rate charge. So that's the hope, is maybe $25,000 in savings.
$25,000 in savings is nothing to sneeze at.
No, that's a big number. Yeah. Like, yeah, when you look at it that way, and then you see, then after this 12 years, they have, the solar panels have a lifespan of 25. So in 12 years, they're paid for. So they have 13 years of all of this money coming back.
Yeah. And so, and it's not, of course, just solar panels. You've already talked about school buses, electric buses, other district owned vehicles that could replace, you know, older fossil fuel burning models. But then there's also the angle as well that school districts can partner with the neighboring community or other communities to provide benefits to residents as well. There are just so many available options out there where, again, that tax credit comes to a nonprofit like a school district, basically in the form of a direct payment, which can help offset the cost of all these things. Now, interestingly enough, Selena, for all the talk about what was happening up on the roof, it's probably another project that he was working on at the time that gets more attention. The new scoreboard is that where the football team plays?
Well, right. Yeah. They're getting, the day I was there, they were putting up a new scoreboard. And so he's like, okay, I'll meet you up on the roof in a little bit. And so he was over there and then we were doing that. And then the funny thing is, he's like, you know, that's a visible project. This project is not visible for people. So what we're doing is we want people to see this. And so we're putting a monitor in the foyer of the school. And so students can watch the energy usage and things like that and see that, you know, more energy is being received during the midday or whatever. So they can use it as a tool in their classroom and other people can see the project that's on the roof. You can put the solar panels in a field or whatever, but you can't see them on the roof. But a football scoreboard, you can see a big project like that. But he said, we want people to see this and see what we're doing here.
I love that. I love the idea of the monitor in the lobby that you can look at and, you know, actually see the benefit. I think more politicians ought to be doing that. If, you know, the Biden-Harris administration should have like these monitors or these billboards up, you know, that show the actual savings so that it's not just some kind of a concept, but that you see cold hard numbers. And you know that some teacher somewhere is going to turn that into like, okay, today's math problem is to go out to the lobby and, and here's what it said last week. And basically the kids are going to calculate the savings to the taxpayer. You know, and sure. Look, and then
cloudy days versus yes. sunny days. And,
yes.
And here's a funny thing, too, that, you know, people were like, what about snow? How's that going to work? And they produce just enough that the snow will melt off. And then it also acts as a cleaning of the solar panels when the snow slides off. So
exactly.
Snow is nice.
Yeah. I mean, for all the, you know, Trump makes all these jokes about, oh, what if it's cloudy? It's like, it still works. And even when it doesn't work, if there's battery backup or it just works at a lower level, like you said, yeah. And then you more than make up for it on some of those sunny days as well. Yep. Selena Heller, you can follow the story she's working on, upnorthnewswi.com or upnorthnews on your favorite social media posts for her videos. Thanks, Selena. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. When we come back, some more voices from the Democratic National Convention, folks that we talked to, including the Assembly Minority Leader Greta Neubauer, coming up next here up north.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Update on the shooting during an attempted robbery yesterday in San Francisco of 49ers wide receiver Ricky Pearsall. He's home from the hospital. Police say the teenage gunman was also wounded and is arrested. Whoever kills hostages does not want a Gaza ceasefire deal, says Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, after the Israeli military says it recovered six bodies of hostages kidnapped by Hamas last October. They include an American, Hirsch Goldberg, Poland, from Chicago. Moshe Lavi, the brother-in-law of hostage Omri Moran, who's still believed to be held in Gaza.
They were brutally murdered by Hamas. We're so angry at the international community for allowing it.
10,000 union hotel workers went on strike today at 25 hotels in eight cities. Higher wages and a reversal of staffing cuts, top issues. They're investigating the collapse of a portion of bleachers at a rodeo arena north of San Antonio yesterday, injuring 12 people. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
The Brewers win again in Oakland. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers took the lead in Game 2, then added some insurance runs late on the way to a 9-5 victory over the A's. Milwaukee's Jake Bowers had a home run, also scored three more times in the game. Brewers manager Pat Murphy on those extra runs in the 8th and 9th.
Really important. Tacking on is however you want to term it. Staying after it, being relentless, pecking away, however you want to term it. It's the key to a Major League game because it's hard to win a Major League game and there's really good players on both sides.
NFL, the Packers have the next 3 days off after beating the Ravens yesterday 30-7 in front of 72,000 fans at Lambeau Field. Matt LaFleur on Packers linebacker Christian Welch, who grew up in Iola, Wisconsin.
He's just a smart, tough, physical player. I thought that interception that he had was an outstanding play. It looked like, to me, he baited the quarterback right there as a hook player and just made a great break on the ball and made the play. And then he had a heck of a return.
That's Matt LaFleur with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Clear tonight, lows in the low 50s. Sunny, 75 for Labor Day Monday. Monday night, mostly clear, a low around 55. Sunshine, 76 for Tuesday, 79 and sunny for Wednesday. On Thursday, partly sunny, a high of 78.
It's 73 at our studios.
Most of us can agree everyone deserves the right to make their own medical decisions. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, we have leaders like Vice President Kamala Harris who are standing up for our rights to make our own medical decisions and protect abortion rights. As Vice President, Kamala Harris helped lead the administration's efforts to protect abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Vice President Harris has worked to defend access to emergency medical care and support the ability to travel for reproductive care. She's fought for access to high-quality, affordable contraception and strengthened reproductive health privacy. Vice President Harris has defended our rights and freedoms against right-wing extremists who want the government to make medical decisions for us. She's a champion for our rights. Visit www.abwt.org/Kamala and tell Vice President Harris, keep fighting for our freedom to make our own medical decisions. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin, sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the talk of Green Bay, 97.9 FM and 1590 AM WGBW. And on the Civic Media app. Matinair on Air.
You know, Greg Bach, I think it is time I need a little time away.
Jane, are you going on vacation?
Yes, I am going on vacation. I feel confident. You're going to do a great job. You got Calvin.
Wait, I'm hosting?
Yes, dear, you're going to be hosting.
I thought you were taking me with you. Okay, I guess I will host the show in your stead. Thank you very much.
I trust you.
Matinair on Air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time for a special Labor Day edition of the show. We'll look back at Wisconsin history and Labor Day. Be with us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to the John and Gordy Show. This week, John and Gordy welcomed in Ben Penrod, organizer of Mad X, a Comic-Con and pop culture expo coming to Madison in a couple of weeks. To hear all of these shows anywhere in the world, check out the Civic Media app, available on the Google Play and Apple App Store.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by Einstein's Express, where we move your package so fast that we actually break the time barrier. In fact, we guarantee that your package will arrive at its destination at least 12 hours before you send it. Einstein's Express, when it absolutely, relatively has to get there the day before yesterday.
You know, I should have used that to get my ink cartridges for my printer.
Yeah, your printer hasn't worked for a couple of days.
For a couple of days, and it's very difficult to plan the show without having this stuff printed out in front of me.
You know, we have printers here at the office.
Yeah, I know, but it's like last minute, and it's tough to put all this stuff together, you know.
It's hard to be you, isn't it?
It's hard to transition to the 21st century, isn't it?
I know, using paper again. You know, I'm really transitioning into the 21st century, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yes.
Right now, let's get to our first guest here, and it is Ben Penrod, and he organizes a lot of the Comic Cons in the region. And welcome to the program, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
Yeah. Hi, thanks for having me.
And we're talking about the MadX Comic and Pop Culture Expo that's coming to the area. It's going to be here on Saturday and Sunday, September 14th and 15th, and it'll be going on at the Expo Center. One of the things that I am really interested in is that, you know, we've had a few of these Comic Cons here in the area, but this one, I mean, this is quite a lineup of guests that you have, celebrities showing up for this, and it's one of the big deals at these Comic Cons is getting somebody's signature or meeting some voice an actor that you haven't had a chance to meet before. Even sign a comic book that you have. This is really a fantastic event. You have quite a lineup of guests this time around.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're really excited. This is super. This is kind of a really. Maybe a little bit bigger lineup than I expected when I first started planning this.
Really?
We've got Tom Kenny, who's the voice of SpongeBob, who's, you know, arguably the biggest cartoon character of all time.
Yep.
We've got the voices of Phineas and Ferb. We've got Rachel Lee Cook, Will Friedle, Alicia Witt, Ross Marquand. These are like huge actors. Ross is in X-Men 97 as well as he's been in like The Walking Dead and a lot of other things.
Well, let me ask you about the X-Men 97. Is that a newer cartoon? That is a newer animation,
yes.
Right?
So they basically, the X-Men animated series from the 90s, they created a new season that started right after that one ended. So that's why they call it X-Men 97. Mm. It takes place in 97. And so we had booked this lineup for MadX a few months ago, and then when the X-Men series started airing, I started realizing that we actually had like half of the actors on the show already coming to MadX.
Right.
It's actually really cool. So between Ross Marquand, David Arago Jr. and Ray Chase, I think we've got quite a bit of the X-Men 97 lineup.
That's incredible, because I have two Gen Zs at home, and they keep me updated on this, and they talked about X-Men 97, even watched an episode with them, and it was really interesting. I couldn't put my hand on whether it was a newer cartoon or an older cartoon, because they call it X-Men 97, and it's throwing me off completely. So
yeah, it's kind of a throwback. It's a really cool idea.
Yeah, it is. And I'm a big fan of the superhero movies, you know, do you have any guests from any of the big superhero movies that have been out?
So Ross Marquand, he played, he was the Red Skull in Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame. It's not like a major role, but he was in those.
Wow, that was great. That was great.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think we've got I'm trying to think if we've got any other like major superhero folks. Alicia Witt was just in Long Legs. Mm-hmm. That's not a superhero movie. That was a Netflix movie.
Well, let's move on. Let's move on.
It's a lot more animation, like voice actors and stuff, and people who have been in TV shows, I think.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about this Comic-Con as well. I mean, you get to meet the voice actors, and it's, again, my Gen Z sons are very much into who acts when and how in what anime movie or television show that they've been watching, right? I mean, this is a big thing for them.
Oh, yeah, and the anime is super huge.